I always believe that well-meaning leads to well-being. And that is a very significant aspect of setting intentions before we get into actions.
There's a sense of forgiveness before you even begin something.
You are tuned into episode 2 of Mind the Gap, a podcast where we bridge diverse perspectives, one conversation at a time. Welcome to Mind the Gap, a podcast where every fortnight we explore the topics of self-leadership and neuroscience in service of holistic well-being. I'm Harmeet Anand, with extensive experience coaching leaders across global organizations. I use the ontological approach, somatic principles, and mindfulness practices to support the leaders and teams I coach.
And I'm Sana Anand, with a background in heart science and a budding neuroscientist. We'd like to preface that we are not experts in these realms,
and we invite you to join us in our podcast where we document our conversations, offering distinct generational and professional points of view. Stay tuned.
So today we'll be discussing intentions, but just for our listeners, I want to reiterate our last episode on purpose, where we discussed how our purpose can be found through gifts that are cultivated by practice. And that's what lets us enter flow states and achieve a greater sense of well-being. And those flow states are actually really important for developing a growth or learner's mindset. But to me, purpose and intention sound very similar. And as somebody that likes to operationalize things very technically, I'm wondering how our purpose and intention is different.
Thanks for summarizing, Sana. I want to just mention also what we spoke about before we get into purpose and intention distinction. We also spoke about the importance of relationships and conversations last time. I think that's important from the point of view of how we will progress with the podcast. So to your question, how purpose and intentions are different, they can easily be confused, for sure. Purpose is like the big why, capital B-I-G-W-I-H-Y. And intentions is before the plans are actually getting executed. You know, how is that purpose going to get executed is essentially intentions. So the manifestation, just before the manifestation of the purpose, how do we want it to happen? I'd say it's like stretching the purpose into a form, where we can start thinking of how would we be feeling, what our thoughts would be, what our actions would be.
Just to oversimplify this for our listeners and a bit for myself too, I'm going to look at intentions as actionable and purpose personified, if I consider it like that.
Yeah, definitely. Why not? You could say that. I think, you know, intentions are also about how do we begin our task? How do we really go about starting, for example, our days? You know, from the Eastern cultural perspective, intentions are very close to the contemplative, meditative practices that we had. In fact, as an individual, I became cognizant that we had in our family, but I was not cognizant of it when I was a child, was how music was played in the beginning of the day. It kind of sets the tone of something. So intentions is essentially also about setting the tone for something that you want in your life.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen that in you and the value of that in you as an entrepreneur, especially because you're an entrepreneur. There's nobody holding you accountable for things. So, and you're setting your own deadlines. So you really do need to set those intentions regularly. But that sort of element of manifestation and positive belief sort of felt like a load of hogwash to me, especially as someone that comes from a very scientific perspective.
I want to add that, yeah, it might seem like a hogwash, but there have been some studies done. I'm forgetting the name of the scientist, but in Japan, study was done where water molecules actually, when they were sent positive intentions to, completely changed in terms of how they crystallized. And I think that's the reason why we have so many water bodies in places of contemplation in India. Especially.
Actually, I never thought about it like that. That's kind of poetic in a sense.
Well, I think, you know, our thoughts really change everything in terms of what we want to create. And that's where intentions come into play. Like, they are really still at the thought level, not necessarily at the plans and goals and execution level.
No, and that idea of thoughts and execution really play a role in how our brain is organized in terms of goal-directed circuits as well. So actually, there are two circuits involved in goal-directed behavior. There's the ventral circuit, which is towards the front of the brain. It's helpful in defining what those goals are. What is that goal? What value does that goal hold for us? Why do we really care about it? And then there's the dorsal circuit, which is more towards the back. And it's about the action, the execution, the strategy behind things. So really, there's a sense of emotional importance as well as behavioral self-control, which are both very prominent in setting those intentions. But what do people struggle with the most when they're setting these intentions?
I think both of them, both in terms of how to execute something and what the goal should be, can be a struggle. But most of the times, I find the bigger and more useful struggle to have is to define what you really care about before getting into the action mode, which we are anyways designed to do. So I would say it's, I think your ventral circuit that you were talking about, the one that really thinks about why I should move. And the other thing that it clarifies is where you are right now and where's your satisfaction line, and to think deeply about it.
You know, what you're saying about reiterating what you really want brings up a lot of Kelly McGonigal's research on the willpower instinct. She's conducted some pretty significant research on the differences of approach and avoidance behavior and what actually helps us govern what we end up doing. So actually the left prefrontal cortex is associated with more approach-related behavior, while the right prefrontal cortex is associated with more avoidance-related behavior. So left, I will, and the right, I won't. And there's actually this third power of the ventromedial prefrontal cortex, which determines and like speaks over this and decides, what do I really, really want? What do I say no to when I need to say no to something? When do I say yes when I need to say yes to something? And this area has connections to our limbic system and our amygdala. So really, it helps govern what is in sharper view over others, like which intentions are we more focused upon than others.
Yeah, I think you've touched upon a very important aspect with that study, which is the emotions. Like, what do I really want? And emotions do tend to, not just tend, emotions play a very significant role.
It's a pretty significant barometer as well.
Yeah. Like, what is personally meaningful to me and what would make me happy? In fact, there's a famous saying which goes that the heart has its own reason and it doesn't know what that reason is, or something like that. But intentions basically are defined by the moods and emotions that we want to experience by executing something. So therefore, you know, that inquiry and that question, what do you really care about? And going deeper with that question is very significant before we even start doing something, like especially since we spoke about purpose last time, really getting into that action mode. Before that, understanding what our emotions and moods we want to experience through it is a critical question to ask oneself.
And identifying the emotion that you want to experience when you achieve something so viscerally, really, I feel like hinges onto visualization as well. Like I'm thinking of an athlete, like visualizing their sense of victory when they achieve something. That is not just about the emotional value of that intention, but it's also something that can be used to make the physical process easier. So a more technical sense and more objective sense with physical actions. I'm thinking about how when we imagine doing something, our premotor planning areas of the brain are also activated in similar regions to the motor areas when we'd actually move that limb. So when the execution and the imagery tend to overlap, we actually end up simulating that movement a lot better and are able to apply it to something new a lot better. And that element of neuroplasticity, I feel like, could also be applied to more behavioral actions and environments, you know?
Yes, it would certainly make things maybe easier for having gone through that visualization and engaged as parts of our somatic self beforehand. However, we have to remember that you still have to do the work afterwards.
Of course.
After the visualization. You know, that reminds me of the law of attraction, which became very popular a couple of decades ago. And that law of attraction.
The secret and all.
Yes, exactly. And it said that if you were, and I don't know whether it said, but the cultural belief is that the kind of thoughts you have will create the manifestation in the world. So if you're, for example, thinking of scarcity or losing money, you will end up doing that. Honestly, I don't believe in all of that.
When I look at you, I know you are a hopeless optimist and I am the very chronic realist in this family. But why do you think that that's not true?
Because there is a very significant difference between what we think and what we believe in. And when you were talking about visualization and the visceral feeling in our body and feeling it literally, sensing it in our body, that I think kind of defines the difference between thinking and believing. It's really when we start believing in those thoughts of, oh, it's not possible, or my belief in that thought is so strong, that's when we, you know, end up manifesting things. It's not just a thought that manifests on its own.
Where does that belief come from, though? I'm just thinking of our belief stems from our environment. And generationally, if I look at things in my generation or in the younger generation, we look at the breadth of the world as really expansive, and we feel like a small fish in a big pond because of the nature of things being so hyper-connected. And we can't really see the change that we are doing when we're actually trying to do something. It might be an intangible change, especially when it's digital or we're working in a really large company. And I understand that people in your generation do have seen the fact that we have many universes out there and that there is a micro nature of our earth in the large scheme of things. But you felt that very theoretically and maybe through textbooks. And you guys had that sense of work, you know, kartavya, duty, family. And then you do XYZ things. You put food on the table for your family and maybe it's less fulfilling. But there is a sense of knowing what your daily intention is because you're repeatedly doing that every day. You know what those small actionable things are. And I've realized even in today's day and age that we need to place a value on daily intentions. And that's what's led me to falling less likely to fall into that doom and gloom.
Yeah, I think the hyper-connectivity has its boon as well as its downside.
Yeah.
And I agree with this overwhelm of so much is possible and where am I in all of this. And I want to, you know, just appreciate how you have kind of figured it out from a very young age where you had these journals and you were writing your daily intentions or monthly intentions and keeping yourself on task. I think it's a significant practice to create your own happiness or feel that you have control over your environment, which may feel hyper-connected.
It's the satisfaction of checking a box from your to-do list.
I do want to correct that it's not like our generation felt insignificant and we're just doing our kartavya. I think we had some great role models. We learned from books, but we also had great teachers, real-life teachers. And more than that, the significance of real-life conversations that played a very important role and continue to play a very important role in our lives today.
We have to really exert control over ourselves because happiness can't be taken for granted, but it's only possible if we do take charge of the things that we can control in our lives, you know?
Yeah, I think finally it comes to attitude. You know, in yoga, we talk about four bhavas, and two bhavas that I just remembered is one of them is called Maitri, which is friendliness. And the other one is Karuna, which is compassion. So if we cultivate those attitudes in our life, we begin something or we think of something positively and we think of the world in a more generous, compassionate way, the end result is always going to be good. I always believe that well-meaning leads to well-being. And that is a very significant aspect of setting intentions before we get into actions.
There's a sense of forgiveness before you even begin something.
I love that.
Yeah.
You know, today only I was reading something about forgiveness, how it has been linked to creating more well-being in our lives. You know, there's this behavioral forgiveness where you think of forgiving something. You know in your brain you want to forgive something. And then there is a visceral forgiveness where you've actually forgiven either it's yourself or someone else. So with that element of maitri or compassion towards, a friendliness, karuna and maitri like I was talking about, already it's a forward blessing that you're giving to your future self and to the people you're going to be interacting with.
Yeah. So I think it's time that we sum up for our listeners what we discussed today with some implementable steps as well. So
yeah, let's do that.
Let's start off.
Yeah, sure. So I think we really talked about zoning into a question before we get into an action plan. Mm-hmm. And that is, who do you really want to be in this world? And being clear about that
And like, not just being clear with that question, but be specific with the emotional state. So how do you want to feel in that moment? And as you were saying with forgiveness, that you can either viscerally feel it or you can think that you're forgiving. We can also subconsciously gauge our intention from our tones, just like we can gauge other people's intentions from their tones. So you can't really trick yourself into being motivated to pursue a particular intention. You actually have to have that tone and that belief in your intention as well.
And the tone changes when you start feeling differently about something. Going deeper with that question about emotions and moods, it's also about going deeper into that belief of who do you want to be and why do you want to be like that. So for example, if I have an intention to be more kind, having those two bhavs in my bhavas that I was talking about in the world, then asking, not just leaving and okay, I want to be kind, going deeper by asking, like, how is that going to change anything for me? And I know that by being kind, I could certainly help more leaders by being kind to their teams. And then the question arises, like, why is that important to me? And I think that is important to me because I want to see a world which is a more kinder place. So just going deeper with that question instead of leaving it at a surface level it really polishes our intention.
Yeah. It's setting an intention that is valuable, not just for yourself, but for the good of others and the universe in a larger sense, makes us more likely to pursue it, I assume.
Yeah.
But it's still important to set smaller intentions in the smaller scheme of things, like in a month or a week or a day, so that we can actually viscerally visualize all of the possibilities rather than feeling like we're in a very oversaturated world and someone, somewhere, some is doing whatever we're already trying to do. So I guess it's important to set that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And of course, and finally, if we've not set our intentions, we can't reflect back on how we're doing. So if you've set our intentions, also remember to have a reflection of the process that we have followed or the things that we have done in that day, week or month, and see how our actions were aligned or not. And then just do it again. Rinse and repeat.
Gratitude is very, very important there too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. In that note of gratitude, thank you for this lovely conversation. I feel like it really supported in building better sense of self for me and I'm sure our listeners as well.
I loved having this conversation on the distinctions between purpose and intentions, two words that we often get confused with. So thank you for your time and your questions.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Mind the Gap. You can subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to this. We hope you learned something from our different perspectives, and if you did, let us know your takeaways on our social media Instagram handle at mindthegap.show.
You can access the show notes of this episode on coachformax.com. That's coach4max.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you feel motivated to engage in conversations that bridge diverse perspectives and create greater mutual understanding.